We present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Shrine. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Thank you, and hello again. My Music is a gathering of five musically minded friends disguised as a radio panel game. We're paying a visit on this occasion to the Cheltenham International Festival of Music. The four contestants being, as ever, John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace, and Dennis Norton. Those are the names, and that, by the way, is the question order. John, Frank, Ian, and Dennis. So John Amos will bat first, which, with his background, is appropriate in this spiritual home of contemporary serious music. Not that our contest is going to be all that serious, I suspect, or all that contemporary. So, John, here is some familiar music. It's played by an orchestra and a conductor much loved here at the Cheltenham Festival in years gone by, the Halley Orchestra under Sir John Barbirolli. John, we know that as sheep may safely graze, but what did it become in ballet form in the hands of Sir William Walton?
I think it became a few wise virgins.
That's right. The Wise Virgins, ballet suite by Sir William Walton. Right. Yeah. Right. Music originally, of course, by Bach, J.S. Bach.
You know, sometimes things go wrong with posters. And the other day I saw a poster, a piano recital in London, and it said, "Sheep May Safely Graze, number 2, Beethoven." And so I rang up the concert agent and I said, "Look, I wonder if I could have a copy of that poster for that pianist who was playing on such a date." He said, "Why do you want it?" So I said, "Oh, I'm just thinking of making a collection of posters." He said, "I'll have a look at it first."
Smart man.
I never got it.
No. Well, I
arrived at a theatre in Billingham once to sing an opera and was surprised to see it had been renamed The Barber of Sabil.
I think I may have told this story before years ago, but it's worth repeating. A listener wrote to tell me that she was once driving through a village in Sussex when she heard the sound of that music, which we just heard by Bach, coming from the village church, obviously a funeral service. So she said to somebody nearby, "I love that music, sheep may safely graze. Whose funeral is it?" And they replied, "Our butcher's." So, we move on. Frank, the subject is still sheep. What has disturbed this flock? I think John is muttering something to you.
Yes, a non-you has appeared. apparently it's Don Quixote.
Yes.
Don Quixote by Richard Strauss.
Yes, that's right.
And Don Quixote is tilting, do you say?
Well, he thinks that they are... What does he think they are?
Well, he thinks doesn't really understand that they're sheep.
And he thinks they're windmills, actually, John, doesn't he?
No, that's it.
He's tilting at these sheep or rushing among them. They have been, in fact, attacked by Don Quixote, or if you still prefer it, Quixote. And do you get your mark, Frank? Ian, enough of bleating. This is singing, not to say choral shouting.
Thank you.
Ian, what is that somewhat repetitive piece?
You really should have asked John that one, because he pronounces the name of the composer so beautifully.
He does, actually. He did once, didn't he, in an earlier series. You tell us the title.
Well, I can only try and give an imitation of John Amis sending himself up when he says it's called Carl Ulf.
Yes. And the piece is called...
The piece is called Carmina Burana, or Burana, Burana.
Yes, Carmina Burana, yes.
Medieval poems.
Sort of, yes.
Set to music.
That's right. I have a sort of nightmare that I will be shipwrecked on a desert island, and I'll find a gramophone and a complete crate of records, and when I open them, they'll all be of Carmina Burana. Dennis, your turn. Yours, too, is a piece for soloists, choir and orchestra of a kind. The plot, I feel, may help you to identify the piece.
Father, with something to tell you, a story of our time, the tragic but inspired tale of manhood in its prime. You know you had a dozen sons. Well, now that's not quite true. But feel no sorrow, do not grieve. He would not want you to.
A dozen sons.
Yes, and I think the singer was Peter Reeves. And it's Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
That's right. By?
By Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice.
Yes. Or if you're a lyric writer, by Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. A dozen sons, now you've lost one of them, is the brothers talking to their father. Yes, that's right. Mark to you. And we move on. John, there's something which was shared by three English musicians of great distinction: Cecil Sharp, Benjamin Britten, and Sir Arthur Sullivan. They share this particular distinction with George Eliot, the novelist, Charles de Gaulle, André Gide, and Thomas Cook, the travel agent. What is it they share? And I'll give you, if you like, a tiny, tiny hint on the piano. Shall I do that?
You better.
But which birthday?
They were all born on November the 22nd.
Which is?
St. Cecilia's Day.
Absolutely right. Marvellous. Congratulations. Yes. And there's your mark, November the 22nd. Frank.
Hello.
Blessed Cecilia, appear in visions to all musicians, appear and inspire. Whose words for Benjamin Britten?
Everyone's done things, poems and things about St. Cecilia. And
not that particular poem.
Well, we think...
We think, yeah.
With a little help from my obverse side. It's W.H. Auden.
Yes, W.H. Auden in Hymn to St. Cecilia, 1942, by Britten. That's right, Mark to you. Ian, who wrote an ode for St. Cecilia's Day?
Cyril Fletcher.
Very nice. Possibly an odd one, yes. I had in mind an even one, actually. What's... Dennis can't be writing it down for you.
Yes, he has. Trouble is, I can't read his writing. Alexander Pope.
Ah, oh, that's crafty. That's the literary Dennis coming
and then
to your aid.
Somebody else.
Well, you
wrote,
can't write a musical ode. An ode is a literary form.
Yes.
And then somebody wrote da 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 Cecilia.
You did a Jonathan Edwards there.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm in.
Give me a toss me off a century.
No. Dennis is very
John Dryden.
Dennis has very, very neatly copped the mark here. Quite
yes.
Right. Words were by Pope. But yes. They were set to music by another gentleman whose name began with P.
Purcell.
Yes, may have been others too, but the famous ode to St. Cecilia's Day by Purcell. Mark to you. Dennis, in Raphael's portrait of her, what is St. Cecilia holding?
Raphael who?
Kubelik? No.
I don't know. It obviously is a musical instrument.
Yes, something associated with her. Indeed, she's thought to have invented it, according to legend.
Well, it's obviously something... It wouldn't be like saying anything like the kazoo. This is allowing...
Jews harp.
The organ.
Yes,
she's
that's
carrying
right.
An
that's
organ.
That's right, yes. And holding an organ which, according to legend, she invented. There is your mark. inspired by my own mention of Raphael, I should go on to say that sometimes a painting inspires the composition of a piece of music, or at any rate has musical connections. John, you will know the composer's name, I think. Can you name the painting and the man who painted it in 1717?
The Departure of Sisyphus.
Yes, or in French?
Le Département.
L'Embarquement, please.
L'Embarquement, Citerre.
Yes, and the painter, do you happen to know?
The painter is Watteau you like.
Yes, that's right. Watteau, and it's in the Louvre. Music by, of course, you recognised it.
Poulenc.
Yes. Always amuses me, that tune, because I know another tune that's so like it. Do you know the bit that goes... reminds me of
Down in the Seine with me.
Yes, down by the Seine with me. So, there we are. You've got the mark. Otto, Embarquement pour Citerre. Smith and Selleck, two pianos there. Frank, Francis Barrow painted it around 1900. Part of the canvas was later painted out and a new section substituted when a famous American inventor refused to buy the painting. You know the picture very well. In fact, there are copies of it in your house. What is the painting called?
This was the time when manufacturers bought famous pictures from art galleries and from the National Galleries, such as Bubbles.
No.
I'm forever
yes,
blowing
like
Bubbles.
That, but it's
was originally
that.
Smoke Rings. Mm-hmm. Because the child was so young, their pairs made it change.
Like that, the, but it isn't that, of course, is it?
Not. No, this is no. The dog.
That's right.
Sitting by the side of the phonograph, which was originally one of those wax cylinders, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wasn't that right?
That's right, yes. The title of the painting was?
What? Weren't I advertised?
No, you must say it. Say it and be banned from broadcasting.
Well, the black and white doggy has got his head twisted to one side, and the title is His Master's Voice.
Yes, and you're only naming a painting, so that's all right. His Master's Voice. In the original, a fox terrier was listening to Edison's phonograph, but Edison refused at the painting. The cylinder was painted out and a disc and horn instrument substituted. In England, trademark of His Master's Voice. In America, of Victor Records. Mark to you. Ian, the music is recent, but the painting was done between 1733 and 1735. Can you give both music and painting a name? Painting from the 1730s, the music, obviously, the opera, much more recent.
The opera is Stravinsky's
got it.
Rake's Progress.
Got it, that's right.
So, presumably the picture is the same.
Yes, Hogarth series.
Hogarth.
Now in the Soane Museum, that's right, Mark, too. Dennis, the painting was done in the mid to late 1800s. The song is more recent and has a sporting connection.
No, I can see why you were so anxious to hush up Frank.
Frank, yes.
That was by Thoroughly Modern Millet.
yes.
Yeah. What's sporting connection? Frank and I, there's only one connection because it's Jimmy Edwards' signature.
Oh, well, yes, that's true. But there's a certain football team. Anybody in the audience care to name it? Thank you. West Ham United, who always seem to do better when that song is being sung from the terraces.
The
I'm
bubbles.
Forever Blowing Bubbles. Bubbles by Sir John Millais. Yeah. And the painting, I've been giving the origins of all the others. That painting is now the property, I'm told, of a soap firm. And we all probably know which one.
Soap firm.
well, Brown Windsor is both soup and soap.
It would have to be a clear soup.
No, it's pear soup, actually.
It's Peter Pears, of course, the singer. Yes.
Let's hastily move on to another round, beginning in this case with some simple identification from John Amos.
It's the music from the ballet by Benjamin Britten called The Prince of the Pagodas, and we need a new production at Covent Garden, please.
Right. The first British full-length ballet. Choreography by John Cranko. Frank, in the story of The Prince of the Pagodas, who plays the part of a salamander?
Smallish chap.
Would you say?
Yes, that's a very good question.
It is. It's a boring answer, but
yes,
a
salamander is not often played by all that many people.
No,
is it? It's probably played by the prince.
Pardon, pardon?
The prince.
Absolutely right. Yes, the prince himself. It's Beauty and the Beast all over again, and the prince appears to Beauty as a
who's
salamander.
The prince?
Yes. Your friend was no help on that, was he, really?
Well, no, he gave me the answer, but he didn't tell me what it was about.
Well, that's something.
It's rather difficult in one word.
Yes.
Ian, that's the Beauty and the Beast story. Talking, though, of legendary beauties... And that's from Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty. What is that particular section called?
Oh. I thought I was just going to have to say Tchaikovsky's Sleeping
Beauty.
Oh,
nothing so easy. Nothing so
what
easy.
What is the question?
What's that particular section called? It's a slow, rather flowery bit, you may have noticed.
Slow and flowery?
Yes. Or sounds like an flowery and slow, actually.
Sounds like an overweight baker.
That's a very good ad-lib. Yeah. Flowery and slow.
Andante or slower?
Well, I wouldn't like to say, really. Try the flower.
tulip.
So, you'd like it to be, that dance would be called the Tulip Andante, would it?
It doesn't ring very true.
Not, no. I am compelled to dock your mark and tell you that, on the contrary, it's the Rose Adagio.
Yes.
From Sleeping Beauty.
It's a nice name, that, Rose Adagio. It sounds like somebody had a Damon Runyon.
Well, we shall see, because I'm going to ask Dennis why, Dennis, you think that music came to be known as the Rose Adagio.
Well, in the first place, it is an adagio. I mean, they couldn't very well call it Tuxedo Junction or, you know, any sensible name like that. And I suppose Rose because it's poetic. It's more poetic than saying, like, the cauliflower adagio, which would never... And it maybe it was the only colour that they had in stock. That's what always happens to me. The only colour that they had, the costumes came out that colour.
Absolutely right, actually. Also, they called it the Rose Adagio because each prince offers Aurora a rose at that point. Mark to you, why not? In this final round, there's singing from each of our contestants. John, in view of the fact that this particular Cheltenham Festival pays tribute to its former president, Sir Arthur Bliss, it would be a nice gesture if you were to sing just a few bars of one of his delightful tunes, and I do mean tunes. In his opera, The Olympians, a character sings, "Oh, bitter, bitter is the beauty of this night, how bitter to the lonely aching heart." The words are by J.B. Priestley, who, of course, wrote the libretto. I think if I play the cello theme on the piano, it will cue you in, all right?
Good.
Like an order at a pub, doesn't it? Oh, bitter, bitter!
I'm glad we got that joke over first.
dark.
Terribly good for those who like that sort of thing.
The answer to anybody who writes and says, are those songs rehearsed? They are not, John, are they? We did that absolutely without rehearsal.
Absolutely. Sure. That's why we went wrong.
Frank, it is unthinkable that you should wish to compete with that. Instead, in very stead indeed, can you please suggest in song to Mrs. Moore that she shouldn't have any more?
Have you got a key?
Well, I haven't really got one ready, but... try that.
Don't have any more. No, can we go up a bit?
Yes, sir.
Or do, do. Don't have any more, Mrs. Moore. Mrs. Moore, don't have any more. The more you have, the more you want, they say. And enough is as good as a feast any day. If you have any more, Mrs. Moore, you won't get through your front door. And when it's time for bed, there's a lot to be said. First guys, cup of tea.
Let our secretary sort out the copyright on that one. We're going to leave Ian till last for this round and turn to Dennis. Dennis, I cherish the ambition to hear Dennis Norden sing music by Franz Liszt at the Cheltenham International Festival of Music. And to achieve this, I'm going to play the second 8 bars of a popular song and ask you to come in with the middle bit. Okay? Yeah.
Closer, my dear, come closer. The nicest part of any melody is when I hold you.
You know you're going. You're... Fair enough.
I think you just wanted to play a Liszt piano concerto at the Cheltenham
Music
Festival.
That's right, yes. Or a second Hungarian Rhapsody at any rate.
Whatever it is, yes.
Ian, a final song from you, and one that concerns a region not terribly far from where we're sitting here in Cheltenham Town Hall, on Lyndon Lee, with, I think, just 2 verses, right? Okay.
Shining grass blades, timber shaded, now to quiver underfoot, and birds to whistle overhead, and waters bubbling in its bed, and there for me. My homeward road to where
And there, on Lyndon Lee, we end this programme. A victory, just by one mark, for John Amis and Frank Muir. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Tony Schreiber.